I just had to figure out a way to live my own life, and I tried to carve it, and thank God for my mother who taught me how to grow alligator skin and to be able to blow things off. And it wasn't until I was much older in life that I realized that I could transition, because there was information out there to read, and you could just type into the internet, you know, boy feels like girl, vice versa, whatever it is, and you come up with information.
Right.
And at that point, once I did that, it was just full steam ahead, because most of my life was over.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't 20.
Right.
I was in my 50s when I did it.
And how, were you scared when that sort of...
Actually, I was excited, really, because,
really?
You know, after all those years, I finally could maybe live the rest of my life and not like I lived the three quarters of my life. And so, you know, that was...
And so when you were younger, you sort of got categorized as lesbian?
Right, exactly.
And as, like, more masculine, maybe, or...
Exactly. I mean, you know, I don't know if they had those. I think they had lesbian then. I'm not sure if they had the term dyke, but, you know, or butcher back then, because I'm not up with all the labels and when they became and when they didn't. But, I mean, they're all out there. But I was definitely masculine. And for 40 years, I dealt with people saying to me, I'm in the wrong bathroom.
Oh.
I got that all the time.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, no. I got it almost every day.
So I want to talk about that for a second, because one of the big things that is troubling for young people, especially, and really anybody, is if you don't look a certain way and you end up, whatever, if you look like a man and you're in the female bathroom, people tell you you're in the wrong bathroom, and the same way the other way. And let's say you just look masculine, but you're not transgender, you just are a female who looks masculine. It's very upsetting to not find a place in the world where you're comfortable publicly going to the bathroom.
Right.
And so that was an issue
right.
for you.
Right, and today, that term's called gender expression, and I always tell people it's your outside wrapper.
Yeah.
Everybody has a gender expression. You know, one day, if you're a woman and you want to wear, you know, sweatpants and a baseball hat, that, you know, you may look a little manly that day. That's just the way you're expressing yourself.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, trying to carve my life, I do whatever I could do, and I used to get that all the time. And then depending on my mood, you know, I would say to people, well, the last time I looked, I could read a sign
or
the right to be here. But, I mean, I dealt with that so long, it actually became a way of life. And again, in those days, not knowing that I could transition, it was something I just had to put up with.
Yeah. So I know we have an audience out there, so I'm just going to make a plug for gender-neutral bathrooms, because I really, really feel that that solves a lot of problems for people, and just tolerance, you know. And I know, you know, sometimes, you know, women, especially now, there's this fear of this predatory male, which has kind of been exposed recently, and that's a real issue, and I'm not denying that, but also, you know, for kids who present as male but are female, for them to be, you know, for this to be a constant issue every time they're in a shopping market and need to go use a public bathroom, it's just unfortunate. So, I mean, I am a real big advocate of gender-neutral bathrooms, because I think it just solves the problem, and it's fine. And as long as, you know, one of the reasons why historically, you know, women are neater and their bathrooms are cleaner. But, you know, we could all, like, learn from that, perhaps. Anyway, on that note,
I mean,
just
to add something onto that, I mean, there's never been an incident recorded of a transgender person causing any trouble in a bathroom. as far as predators, we have rules for that, and laws, and that's got nothing to do with being transgender.
100%.
I mean, you know,
100%.
If they want to go look, get all the politicians off of Capitol Hill and their antics in the bathrooms. I mean, you know.
No, totally agree. We're going to take a call now from Jenny in Georgia. Hi, Jenny. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling for a couple of reasons. I'm actually a registered nurse, and I have several transgender patients. I work in aesthetic medicine, so I do, for instance, with my trans female patients, like hair reduction with all of my patients if hormones are giving them issues with acne, things like that. So first and foremost, I want to make sure that I'm equipped with the best ways to be most sensitive to my patients. And secondly, I happen to be in a personal situation where my spouse was assigned female at birth, but has always been masculine identified, and that's been really stifled throughout their life. But since our relationship, apparently I've encouraged sort of that expression, and they are considering transitioning. So I want to also be as supportive as I can without pushing or seeming like my encouragement or my support is being too overwhelming.
So just to get the facts straight, so you're married to someone who was assigned female at birth but is considering transitioning to male? Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so in terms of your patient, I'll start with the patients and then maybe Seth can talk about the transitioning and how to be supportive. I think the thing that we notice as healthcare providers, you know, at NYU, we're developing a program and we've been working with transgender patients for, well, 10 years. I have been. I think the main thing is respect and that just comes from asking questions and being open and honest, and when you don't understand something, just being open about it. And sometimes there are, you know, there's some situations where the information you're given is very confusing. So there's a medical record that designates somebody as female because they still may have, you know, female organs, but they present as male and their name may be Seth. And so you're confused by that. And that is, it's totally understandable, you know, in those scenarios to be confused. So the thing to do is to just ask the question and just be open and say, you know, your record says this, you know, tell what's your preferred pronoun? What name do you like to be called? And, you know, should we change any of this information? Because I'm seeing this. And then, you know, in terms of if you're doing aesthetic stuff, you know, it's the same thing. It's like any aesthetic patient, you know, how do you want to look? What would be your ideal? You know, what do you want to change? Or how can we augment anything? And I think just don't be scared. You know, be respectful and be open and be honest. And I think that's the best you can do.
Yeah, and to add to that, I know because I haven't really experienced too much issues with doctors. It's really not my job to educate them, but the kind of person that I am, I enjoy educating doctors because...
You educated me a lot.
Because...
Seth was my patient.
Because, you know, the people coming from behind me can benefit from that.
For sure.
And I think people also know when you're trying to be... you know, empathetic and sympathetic to them, and you're not just coming in like a bull in a china shop. I mean, people can tell from emotion that you're trying and you're trying to reach out. A lot of times, I think the opener is what's your pronouns, and that's the language that trans people kind of know that you know a little bit about what's going on without actually having to say it, and then it's up to them as to how far they want to go.
And then in terms of her being supportive of her spouse, what do you recommend in terms of transitioning or, you know, without pushing it?
Well, the question is whether your spouse really wants to transition or is it they? Because I heard you say they.
They were assigned female and biologically is female. What makes our situation difficult? I mean, our situation is no more difficult than anyone else, but the concern is that they'd have to possibly switch jobs, and they're a physician, and it's just a difficult. With anyone, it's difficult, but it's.
Yeah.
I want to be sensitive without being pushy, but
right.
I want to help foster it too, if that's my place.
Right. Is your partner using the pronoun they, or are you just saying they?
They prefer the pronoun they, or male pronoun.
Yeah.
Okay. Transitioning, not everybody transitions, not everybody takes hormones, not everybody does surgery. Some people, you know, will identify as male and just use male pronouns or the third person, they. It's up to your partner. I mean, for the both of you, I believe that an open line of communication is very, very important, because when you're in a relationship and you're attracted to someone who's female and all of a sudden they're going to become male, which we're talking about orientation, that's a whole other thing as well.
Well, one reason why I feel like I'm trying to not be pushy is because I'm actually attracted to men. And when I met this person, they were already very masculine identified, but have articulated that I've kind of just helped them along in that journey even more so.
So, for me, it's no problem, but you don't want to push it down the throat, right? So, you know what I would recommend? And this is what I recommend to my really young patients, is to talk to other people. Just talk to somebody who seems similar, and talk to them about their transition process. And like Seth was saying, you know, the interesting thing about transitioning is there's no straight line. Like, it doesn't have to be you go on hormones and then it's 2 years and then you do this and then you do this. Some people never go on hormones. Some people never get bottom surgery. Actually, most female to males never get bottom surgery. And their dysmorphia may only be related to their chest. And so they will only choose to have top surgery. So I think the best thing to do is, rather than you trying to be the advocate, you know, you're supportive, you're with them, you're interested in this, but I would recommend that they talk to somebody who's a professional,
a gender therapist.
Yep. And then talk to people who have transitioned and at different stages, and just see what that feels like.
There's also, you said you're from Georgia, so there's also an issue, I would think, or maybe an issue of work. And how trans-friendly they are.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you said your partner is a doctor.
Correct. And ironically, a breast surgeon. Yeah.
And so, you know, it depends on the environment in the hospital. That, you know, like you said, they may have to get another job if the hospital isn't trans-friendly. I know there are pockets in Georgia that are. But, you know, every place is different, and a lot of that's going away. I would imagine if things were easier around the board, that it would be easier. So there's other things involved in possibly transitioning.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of great gender therapists, and there are probably a lot of people that would do it remotely. And there are also support groups. So all of this stuff you can access online. And I think that's a really good source. And sometimes for your partner, just identifying with somebody who seems like how they are is helpful. And if they can say, oh, that person is like me and I want to become more like that, or that's how I would feel more comfortable, then sometimes that's a thing that is really helpful. And seeing the possibility of, someone that you can identify with. You know, it's like having a role model.
And the other thing is, I mean, for me, there was no doubt. It was gnawing at me for over 50 years, and nothing, no wall, no ravine, no river was going to stop me from doing what I wish I could have done when I was a teenager. And some people have that drive, that persistence and insistence, and some people maybe ride the middle of the road. And that's something that's going to shake out in time.
Right. I mean, the first and foremost, their happiness and their mental well-being is what's most important. And I don't want to have them be in a place where they don't feel like their authentic self and then have that cause, you know, other problems.
Right.
Right. I mean, you're supporting your partner, which is really a great thing, because I know a lot of times in relationships, transitioning is pretty much the end of a relationship in most cases, especially if it deals with a change of orientation, where it appears to be a change of orientation.
Right. Well, for us, I think you guys have given me some good advice, because I don't want to sound too excited to then make it sound like I'd be disappointed if it
didn't happen. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. I would just, you know, seek professional help and then some sort of support group environment that's supportive.
And the environment in Georgia as well.
Yeah. Okay, Jenny. Well, good. Yeah, good luck to you, and thanks a lot for your call. It was very pertinent to our topic.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Okay. You are listening to Dr. Radio. This is the Plastic Surgery Show. I'm Dr. Alexis Hazen, your host, and we are live from NYU Langone Health every Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Tonight, we're talking about transgender surgery and transitioning from male to female and female to male and what that entails. And we have an expert speaker and life coach and author, Seth Reines, who transitioned himself. And he speaks on this nationally, and we are happy to take your calls. If you would like to talk to us about this or have questions, you can call us at 1-877-698-3627. So, Seth, in terms of your transition, I know everybody's is really different. What's been the hardest part? Either emotionally,
physically. Losing my hair.
I bet that's right. So, tell us about that. Why do you?
tell you
I have
about
a very
it.
Quiet research assistant who's just listening and not speaking, and she's very interested in this. So, tell us about the hair loss and why that happens sometimes.
Well, the testosterone and the DHT.
Yeah.
Everybody has different answers. I don't know if it brought out the male pattern baldness from my mother's side of the family. You know, it's funny. I think about it, but I took a look at my mother's father, and unfortunately, I have less hair than he does, so I didn't follow that.
Yeah.
But and if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have half the hair that I have back on my head because I had a transplant 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And those hairs are fine. It's all the rest of them behind it that are falling out. But that's something that I think was the hardest for me. But but the drive to be who I was certainly outweighed that. And believe me, I had a full head of hair.
Your hair looks great, though.
All
it
12
does.
Of them.
No, you get tons of hair. And it's beautiful. It's salt and pepper. Seth is very good looking. I just might say. It's radio, so you guys can't see, but it's true.
But to get to your answer,
yeah.
I think one of the things that I also speak about today, especially for people who transition older, the quiet piece that people don't talk about a lot is the mental piece that people have to handle, because they can take the hormones and they can do the surgeries. And, of course, everybody tries to strive surgically for what they believe is their epitome of a female or a male, you know, relational to each person.
Right.
And you can do the hormones and the surgery, but what about your head? You know, when you are in the wrong body for many years, and I don't mean kids that are, you know, 8 and 10 and they're starting to transition early. When you're in in the wrong body, as you believe, for 30 or 40 or 50 years, there is what I call mental chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And I live with that perseveration every day. Like, I'm a boy, I'm a boy. I wish I could do this. Men couldn't do that. Women wouldn't have to do this. Whatever the chatter was. And through the surgery.
So it's like background noise.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people suffer from this.
Everybody suffers from everything.
From everything.
Everything.
But, and that's why I think people talk about meditation and these practices to sort of quiet the noise.
Right.
And so for you, it was specifically about wanting to be male.
Right.
And
there was nowhere to go back in those days to be able to quench that. I couldn't do that. So when I decided to go forward, it was almost like leaping off a building, because that's the way I felt at that point. And whatever it was, it had to come out better than where I was coming from. And of course, at my age, I didn't have a lot of issues. I worked for myself. I didn't have to worry about my family telling me, nay.
Yeah.
So
because they were dead?
Well, and because I was in my 50s.
Right.
What are they going to say to me?
Right.
They're not supporting me.
But part of the reason why you waited to transition was because of that, right?
Well, a small piece, but also there wasn't a lot of what I would call valuable information that I could say, gee, I could do this and I wouldn't be an experimental case.
Right.
Once the information and the floodgates opened, I'd say in the last 5 to 7 years, there was a lot of information, and I just went forward with a calculated risk and in good faith that whatever it looked like on the other side was going to be far better than the 50 years that I have come through. even though my life was pretty good,
yeah.
unlike kids that are like end up being homeless yeah. or on the street because their parents kick them out when
right.
they're teenagers.
Like you had a job, you had a house,
right.
you had a partner,
right?
You had a cat.
I had five cats. I have now none. But
oh, okay.
Yes.
Wait, you had five?
Yeah.
Now, this is a nod in sequitur, but you were like the crazy cat lady back then.
No, I just love my animals, and I felt bad. I felt bad when I adopted one to be with the other one, and I said, oh, we got to take this one home because these two are young, and that one's old, and that one's going to go. There was a whole philosophy
And now
it.
You don't have any cats?
It's the first time in my life I don't have an animal.
Well, you need an animal.
Yeah, okay.
If your listeners
no. there are
wait,
plenty,
why,
but
why don't
I mean,
you have an animal?
Right now, what I want to do is have the freedom to
travel.
You know, well, when people want me to speak somewhere, and I've got to get on a plane and go somewhere, even though I had someone that would take care of the cats,
You're
I just
so
felt.
Cute.
But you know what? I gotta tell you, this is my true reasoning for it. I'm older, and my cats live 18 to 20 years, and I'm not so sure I have that much time left.
Oh, come on.
No, seriously. And so I thank you.
People, you know what? There was a documented report of somebody who lived like 130 years.
Well, that's not going to be me.
Go.
But anyway,
you
what
have
I'm
no
saying
teeth
is.
Left,
yeah, right, exactly. But
gum your
I don't want them to, I don't want them to outlive me. And
okay.
So that's my feeling at the moment. But, you know, that could change in 6 months to a year.
Okay, more on that later. But in terms of your transition, when we first talked and I first met you, you were what's called stealth.
Right.
And now you're totally open.
Right.
So tell our listeners what stealth is and then what happened to make you totally open. Because you did like a 180,
yes.
360, I don't know.
Yeah.
180
exactly.
and 360.
Yeah. Stealth means that, and you'll find that most FTMs, female to male, will transition to male, and then it's not like going back in the closet, but they'll forget their past and they'll just be men. And they're not willing to put it out there because they can blend easier into society as opposed to MTFs, male to female, who transition later. I mean, not everybody's Caitlyn Jenner, and they're not going to have that money, and they're not going
right.
to be able to pour it into their face and their clothes, and they're not going to have bodyguards, and they're not going to have
right.
all that kind of stuff. So the crucial part, and I always talk about it, is male to female. If those kids can transition early and they can block puberty, just like Jazz Jennings,
yeah,
they have a very good chance of blending. And people use the other word passing, which to me, I can't stand that word because I'm not getting over on anybody and I'm not hiding something. When you blend into the crowd, that means, as far as I'm concerned, you're successful.
Yeah.
Nobody can point you out. And so for the male to female, it makes it harder
mm-hmm.
when they've already gone through secondary
yeah.
sexual characteristics, the beard, the voice.
Right.
And their surgery
because
becomes expensive.
Because those things then don't reverse.
Exactly.
Okay.
They don't. And even through surgery, it can help a lot. And voice lessons, it can help. But if you're 6 feet tall,
you got big hands. Adam's apple.
Exactly. Yeah. It's hard. It's very, very hard. And that's the one little percentage that people are complaining about now,
yeah.
the so-called quote-unquote man in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And for those out there listening, a trans woman, it takes everything that she has to get dressed and put her makeup on just to go outside of her house to go shopping,
yeah.
to do the little mundane things and not have people point her out.
Yeah.
So if you take that concept and you say, you know, this person's in the bathroom, do you really think they're going to cause a scene? They want
yeah.
to go in and get out and not have any issues
any
or any
trouble.
Problems.
Yeah.
They're the most benign in the women's bathroom than anything else or any other type of situation that could arise. It has nothing to do with transgender people.
No. So when you were quote-unquote stealth, that just meant that you were just trying to just blend. You weren't pointing out that you had originally been a female, and now you are. So
now I'm out there. Here I am.
So I am here. So why did you decide to make that change? Because you can't see Seth, but he looks like a guy, acts like a guy, sounds like a guy, and it really you always did. I mean, even before you transitioned in any kind of way, I mean, you were very male in all ways. So, but now you're kind of you know, owning that. So why do you feel that's important, or is it just just part of you?
When I was finishing up my last surgery and I had time to recuperate, a friend of mine used to say to me, "You need to go and speak about this. You need to speak about it." And I said, no, I don't want to do that. And I was building my house at that time, and it was already recorded, unbeknownst to anybody, on the tape, because as I was building it, I was transitioning, and that was happening on the tape, even though that was not the subject of the video.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why she said I should go do it. But to be honest, I heard Chas Bono say he did not want to have bottom surgery because it wasn't perfected yet, and that's not the truth. And so I really went out to speak to debunk the myths.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny, I always joke when I talk about cis males, which are males that are born male and identify as male,
yeah,
as opposed to trans males. And if you line them up naked, you know, against the wall and they've all had surgery, you can't tell them apart. And then I go, well, wait a minute. The trans males are showers, they're not growers. And that's really what the deal is. I mean, you know, you get to order up what you want. It's not so easy to stuff it in and keep walking. So, I mean, honestly, I wanted to tell the truth. I felt it was time to give back because I don't want kids to live the way I lived. And I had a decent life, unlike some of these kids that really are kicked out of their house because the parents can't handle the fact that they're trans.
Yeah. Yeah, and you didn't have that because
no.
you were, and but you identified as gay, and your parents accepted that, or was just quiet.
I didn't say anything until I was about 40.
Oh, that's good.
And I mean, my mother knew because, like, again, Dr. Money said to my mother, if she even dates, she's going to be way older. So I think he kind of prepared my mother for that because I don't think he really wanted to tell her what was going on.
Right.
Again, without my mother here to collaborate, I
you don't really know.
I don't really know. I just know what I felt.
Yeah.
And but I mean, for me, you know, I'm lucky, but these kids that their parents kick out, I mean, really, when you have a kid, the kid could have diabetes, they could have ADD, they can have dyslexia. The only issue with a trans kid is they're wearing their issue on the outside, whereas other people, you can keep it inside, but everybody's going to have some cross to bear.
Of course. So on that note, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back, and we will take your questions, and our phone lines are open. Please give us a call at 877-698-3627.
This is Doctor Radio, Sirius XM 110, and on the Sirius XM app. MLB Network Radio and Mad Dog Sports Radio broadcast from baseball's winter meetings at the happiest place on earth, the Walt Disney World Resort.
Yo ho, yo ho, a terrible manager's life for me.
Hear interviews with managers and executives.
Do you want to sign a pitcher?
Coverage of baseball's winter meetings is on now on MLB Network Radio, Sirius 209 XM 89, and Mad Dog Sports Radio, Sirius XM 82.
Thursday on Doctor Radio at 10 a.m. East. Is the snooze button on your alarm clock bad for your heart? Is there a viable alternative? Dr. Nisa Goldberg reviews the research. At noon East, the window for open enrollment is closing soon. Are you all set for 2018? NYU insurance specialist Andrew Rubin helps identify your options for staying covered if you missed your company's deadline. And hear what you can do if there's a gap between your current policy and your next job. That's some of what's happening Thursday on SiriusXM Doctor Radio.
Hi, I'm Seth Krudetsky, host of Seth Speaks on SiriusXM Stars. I've been a stand-up. I've done a lot of Broadway shows, even done a few choice TV shows. Come listen to Seth Speaks where I chat with my celebrity friends. Hi, Martin Short, Sarah Silverman, Tina Fey. Seth Speaks is the only show where you'll hear about hilarious onstage disasters, where I play the piano and make celebrities sing.
Hit it, Josh Groban.
Meow, 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 meow.
All throughout, it's comedy, dishing, games, and high notes. Only on Seth Speaks with me, Seth Krudetsky, every weekend on SiriusXM Stars 109.
P.S. 109, awesome, I go wait. Anybody?
Hi,
it's Ron Bennington from SiriusXM's Raw Dog Comedy Hits. Join me for my show, Bennington, that I co-host with Gail Bennington. No relation. We'll be talking to the biggest names in comedy every single day, from the best and brightest rising young comics to the greatest of all time.
Nothing touched the crowd like our comedy.
That so just blew up for you.
The comedy just worked.
Bennington, weekdays, noon east, 9 a.m. west on Raw Dog Comedy Hits, SiriusXM 99, or listen on the SiriusXM app.
If you're feeling under the weather from a lack of 80s new wave and classic alternative, SiriusXM's First Wave has the cure. The Smiths and Depeche Mode, along with daily features that will jog your memories of the 80s, like Monday's Magnificent 7 Countdown and the Saturday Night Safety Dance Mix Show. The 100% commercial-free classic alternative music channel, First Wave SiriusXM Channel 33. Or listen with the SiriusXM app.
A dose of Dr. Radio.
The vast majority of strokes are not painful. You may have headache, and that's not uncommon, but that's not usually the main driver of symptoms that would cause people to come in.
There is no drug that is as effective as exercise.
Antidepressants will never work taking a few at a time. They'll only work if they're taken regularly.
Dr. Radio, because it matters where and when you get your health information. SiriusXM 110.
For your chance to visit the Dr. Radio studio, attend an editorial meeting, and have lunch with the medical director of Dr. Radio, go to SiriusXM.com/Hungerthon.
Welcome back to the Plastic Surgery Show. We are live from NYU Langone Health, and I'm Alexis Hazen, your host, and we're talking with Seth Reyness, who is a speaker and a life coach and also an author. We're talking about transitioning and gender dysphoria, and thank you for joining the show, Seth. We are also taking your calls or emails, and you can be anonymous if you have questions about transitioning. You can call us at 1-877-698-3627. So we have a very long email. I'm going to try and paraphrase it. So in short, there are a couple parts to it, we'll discuss. 16-year-old son going to start testosterone therapy soon. Socially transitioned at the end of 8th grade at age 14. Gender identity has been consistent. He has undergone therapy to help him deal with gender dysphoria. Mostly he does well, but occasionally has tearful bouts about dysphoria related to his genitalia. So then the question is, do we think that hormonal therapy will help the gender dysphoria in terms of the body, or will it make it worse? So what do you think?
Well, you can't have a blanket statement on that.
Yeah.
First off, I mean, when I started taking T, which is the acronym for testosterone, I was already in menopause, and you know, it affects how to go through second puberty. But when you have a kid who's going through first puberty,
yeah,
and hormones and everything else are raging all over the place,
yeah,
some of that is just puberty. As far as the dysphoria, everyone is different.
Right.
With the amount and how poorly it may affect a child. Bottom surgery, I know, is an issue, and a lot of people don't do it, and a lot of people want to do it, and
yeah,
they may do a metoidioplasty, which is the smaller version of bottom surgery, where they take the clitoris and they just create a phallus out of that, and then there's the phalloplasty, which they borrow from different donor sites of the body to create a larger penis, 4, 5, 6 inches. Some people 8. I don't know why, but they do. I don't know how to put that in underwear, but anyway. For your child, you know, I wish I could say to you that there may not be some dysphoric events.
Yeah.
But one thing I can say to you, if bottom surgery is going to happen, and since he's 16, it's not going to happen tomorrow, maybe in
right,
his 20s, any doctor who does any type of surgery is going to, you know, ask your child to sort of experiment,
yeah,
you know, with his sexual, you know, how do I say that? You know,
well, it's orientation, and because you know, and...
And physical sex.
And physical sex,
whether
yeah.
it's with him or somebody else
right.
or whatever it is, because they're going to have to know how to arrange parts and move parts, and
yep.
they can't play a guessing game. And at the end of the day, you know, as good as the surgeons are, you have what you're left with, you know, based on the interpretation between you and the doctor.
Yeah.
And will the dysphoria go away? I wish I could promise you that it would or it wouldn't, but
yeah.
for most people that I've talked to, it has gone and it's lessened, because when they look in the mirror, their mind now matches what they physically see, and that's usually the issue that goes on.
Yeah.
It's not a natal-born male, and you have to get used to it, but most people ease into that, and they go along their way. I mean, we don't live in a perfect world, but surgery by far... For trans men has come a long way.
Yeah. So our experience has been with top surgery in females transitioning to male, that's the surgery that most people get if they have any surgery. And if they have dysphoria about their chest and their body, that surgery seems to really, really improve their feelings about it.
Right.
And for the majority of our patients who we've surveyed, the bottom surgery is much more private and personal, and is... their dysphoria about their genitalia is much less. And so, on the other hand, there are patients who have top surgery, have gone testosterone, have top surgery, and then they had never really thought about their genitalia, and then suddenly that's the thing that's left, and that's
right.
the thing that bothers them. So I think it's probably all over the map
and
on that.
And it's personal. I mean, I know for a lot of kids who need to have top surgery, if puberty's blocked, chances are it may not happen, but
yeah.
if you can't catch that in time, and there's all types of top surgeries, but I can tell you one thing. I know kids that end up wearing binders for years. It's not a great thing.
No.
And it's not a great thing that happens to the breast, and it makes a surgeon's
yeah.
job harder, as you will tell them.
Yeah.
And but it's also very difficult to wear a binder. I mean,
very difficult.
The only way I can liken it, and this will show my age, it's like wearing a girdle on your chest, because
yeah.
it's not like Under Armour. It is really, really tight. And I did it once, and I said, that's not happening to me. I got my arms up. I couldn't pull it down. I got stuck with my arms in the air. And
oh my
I
God.
Got the. And then when I got it down, I couldn't breathe, and I felt like everything was sucked in,
yeah.
Especially if you have a large chest. And then, like, you wear a T-shirt first and put a binder on, then another T-shirt, and
yes.
now you're 90 degrees in the summer. And some of these kids, if they have dysphoria, they don't
sports.
Want to take the binder off
right.
at night, which you have to do. You've got
right.
to let everything relax.
Yeah. So I think for the parents, I think they have to support their child in this, because the child has been totally identified as male. They want to start testosterone. Usually, in most patients, the testosterone is very helpful. And in most patients, they feel more at ease. They like the changes. If only, you know, often the first thing that changes is the voice, and people are usually really happy about that.
And also, this particular email says he hasn't started T yet, and
yeah.
I can tell you when T starts, they block that estrogen, and so you may not see a lot of tears and sappiness, because it really does thwart what estrogen does. And so, you know, that in itself may be an answer. He may not be as upset and
yeah.
teary-eyed.
So I think they're doing the right things, and their support, they should keep on supporting. We're going to take a call now from Cynthia in Pennsylvania. Hi, Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm transgender. I'm 65 years young. I'm in between. But I was wondering what surgery I could get for voice.
So
I saw an ad or something online.
Yeah.
There's one
so there
in
are
South
some
Korea,
surgeries.
But.
So you were natally male and transitioned to female.
Correct.
Yeah.
Male to female.
And you're on estrogen.
Yes.
Did your voice change at all with the estrogen, or not really?
A little, but very little.
So there are a couple of surgeons in the States who do
Tracheal shave,
and they also do some surgery actually on the vocal cords. There are also some physical therapists who I think are called occupational therapists who do some voice sort of coaching.
Yeah, I've seen those. I've tried some of them, and it's helped a little bit. But
not that much. I believe there's somebody, and you are in Pennsylvania?
Correct.
I think there's somebody actually at NYU who does it. And
yeah, I'm in Pennsylvania, and then I work in Baltimore. But
yeah. So I know that there is surgery that can be done. Usually ENT surgeons do it. And so anybody that's a specialist in vocal cord surgery would be the kind of person to see.
And maybe some of the speech therapists can recommend doctors.
A doctor,
as well.
Yeah. But you're in good areas. There are plenty of surgeons in the Baltimore area, DC, and also in Pennsylvania. But I would recommend finding somebody who is an ENT who specializes in vocal cord rehabilitation. And
are the outcomes really good, or?
They're not bad.
It's
not perfect, but it would be better.
I mean, they would be able to tell you. They'd be able to tell you by looking at your vocal cords, you know, where that's at.
Right.
But also, as in speech, women speak differently than men, and they speak on a couple notes higher. I remember having to do some speech when I had nodules on my vocal cords because I taught tennis and I spoke so much I was like hoarse and squeaking, and I had learned to speak a couple notes higher. So, but that takes work.
Right. Yes.
But it's definitely something you could work on.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for your call. You are listening to Dr. Radio. We're the Plastic Surgery Show. I'm your host, Dr. Alexis Hazen. We are on Sirius XM channel 110. And if you have questions about transitioning or surgery, you can call us at 1-877-698-3627. So, Seth, one of the things you talked about a little bit was blocking puberty, and that in some cases, if a child really has identified that they feel that they're in the wrong, that they want to transition or something, that one of the options is to quote-unquote block puberty.
Right.
So what does that mean?
Well, let me just go back and quickly paint the perfect timeline if I can.
Yeah, sure.
So gender identity is formed between 18 months and 3 years of age. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean your child's going to come to you at that age and say, I'm a boy or a girl, but kids do that. And you have to wonder where that's coming from. So you know it's internal. It's something that's within. If you have a child that comes to you at 5 or 7 or 8 or 10, and you understand that this could possibly be the situation, the most important thing is to get to an LGBT clinic in your area. And HRC.org has all the LGBT clinics across the country. Now, that may be an hour or two from where you live, but you're not going to be going there every week. You go there maybe a couple times a year. So you're on the radar. You're on the roadway. And people think, oh, I don't want my kid to transition at 10. Well, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. They just monitor that child, and they check for when this child may possibly be going into puberty, and that's done by blood. And if you were in a perfect world and they can block that puberty, like with Lupron, and I forget some of the other, maybe Sepirlin, I don't remember if it's male to female or female to male, the secondary sexual characteristics don't happen. And so that would be a beard or a lower voice for men, or breast, or women, or kids, you know, girls getting their period. And they block that. And it also buys some more time for parents to get on board. Because really, if the kid is transgender, the kid knows, and they usually end up dropping an encyclopedia on the parent's desk and saying, I want hormones today and surgery tomorrow, and the parents are like, what? So the question is, once they get on board, because they've been doing this for maybe 4 or 5 years, by the time it comes time to blocking puberty, you know, you're going to realize your kid's not in a phase, and that's the road you're going. So they block puberty, and then a couple years later, they give cross hormones. Now, is that at age 13 or 15? Every kid is different.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly, you know, precise 13 for every kid, because I think a lot of kids are going into puberty at 10 these days.
Yeah.
So they try to do it with other kids so they all sort of mature at the same time.
Yep.
And once you do that and you block, especially male to female, you won't have the Adam's apple. You won't have the beer, yeah. which is extremely painful to remove through electrolysis. And for boys that get to go on estrogen with blocking, which is spironolactone. I always get tripped up on that
spironolactone.
Word.
Spironolactone.
There you go. Thank you. See, that's why you're here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, then their growth will also get stunted a little, you know,
right.
by the estrogen. So they won't grow so tall. And,
right.
and vice versa for females, they'll be able to grow a little taller. Because really, until a child goes into puberty, you can't tell if they're a boy or a girl if you dress them differently. Because
every
person has estrogen and testosterone in their body, males and females. So
right.
it's not like you're introducing something that the body doesn't have.
Right.
It's just a matter of one taking control of the other in puberty, and one is, you know, suppressed and one raises above and then becomes, you know, whatever that is for the child.
So if you did that, you block the hormones, let's say, in a natal male who is, so you block the testosterone and put them on Lupron. Then, let's say, 2 years later, they're like, I do want to be a boy. Then you just go off the hormones and no harm
right,
done?
Right. Yeah. I mean, from what my understanding is, that puberty blockers, you know.
Yeah, are pretty safe.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's a really, really good point, because one of the things... The things that are so difficult for patients is if they physically want to transition, but socially they're not accepted because of the way they look, and they still present as male even though they feel very female. You know, that's very difficult.
It's hard.
And
it's hard.
Like you were saying, you know, I mean, I always think about Caitlyn Jenner and just. You know, all the surgeries, the money, the protection. I mean, you know, so that's a very different transition than your average person
right.
who doesn't have access to all, you know, even just the wardrobe.
Right.
Oh, my God, you know.
I mean, and that's why the community's in arms about it, because, I mean, she may at some point in time maybe be a good spokesperson, but right now, she, even though she's trying, she doesn't have a clue of what it's like to be down here in the trenches.
Yeah.
And what really, you know, and to be out of a job and to be, you
yeah.
know, cast aside and whatever happens, depending on each person
yeah.
and where their life is. I know a lot of trans women who transition later in life, and they're doing pretty well. So it's individual. It's also the support. The support is the biggest thing that a trans person needs, because when things don't go right, and as they do sometimes
yeah.
for everybody, actually, you need to have support, and you need to be able to, like I said, as my mother used to say, grow alligator skin and
yeah.
not let people affect you and try to go on. Is it easy? No. Some days it's very hard.
Yeah.
And some days, you know, you've got a great day, and you have to sort of say, wow, this is a great day. I want to have more of these, and just keep going forward.
Have you ever thought, oh, I shouldn't have transitioned?
No. I mean, transition, no. I mean, for some other things, I mean, like I said, you know, it's an issue dating at this point, because I'm dating people my age and my generation, and they're the people I'm trying to educate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, but there's always going to be somebody for somebody. And honestly, I've been so busy going out and speaking and talking
yeah.
that I haven't. Everybody keeps telling me, oh, go on this dating site and that dating site. I just haven't done it. I know. And you've told me that. You keep telling me to do that.
I'm
so
like,
find somebody for me and make
I'm
it
like,
easy.
I'm like, go to a bar and have a conversation.
I tried that. And all the men walked in. There was no women.
That's awesome. I had another great question for you. Now I'm forgetting what it was. In terms of your transition, the hardest part was the bottom surgery.
Right, right,
yeah.
right.
And you would do it again, but maybe differently?
I'd do it again, and I'd do it with different doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain things weren't out, they weren't available.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it deals with money.
Yeah.
You know, a bottom surgery, if you're doing a phalloplasty, is easily 80 or 100K.
Yeah.
If you're going to get it done right, because it involves about 6 or 7 different surgeries, depending on how far you want to go. And that even includes a hysterectomy if you don't do
yeah.
that beforehand. There's a lot involved. And if you're going all the way, full blown, you know, with testicles or an implant, or I mean, an implant or a rod, quad or or and the urethra. That's the trickiest part of the whole thing. And I know there are like Dr. Zhao was just here. He's a master at it. Yep. I'm so happy that he's doing, you know, constructive surgery.
No, it's true.
Instead of reconstructive.
Okay, so one thing that people get really confused about, and I myself was confused about this, gender identity, sexual identity. So you can be a transgender person, you're female, you transition to male, and be gay, right?
Right.
So it's separate.
Right. Well, here's my.
And I know this now, but I know there are a lot of people who are like, wait, what?
Here's my take on it. There's sexual orientation and gender identity. And simply stated, gender identity is who you go to bed as, and sexual orientation is who you go to bed with, and they're models apart. Now, this is my take. I haven't read anything on it. You know, let's take me for example. So when I grew up, I was attracted to women, right? So the world labeled me lesbian.
Right.
I didn't label me. They did. Okay. I transition and I'm still attracted to women. And so the world labels me straight. But my orientation didn't change.
Right.
Now, there are some people who do transition and their orientation may change. Mm-hmm. My perspective, and I have no data on this, this is just common sense in my gut, says that before they transition, let's take me so I can give the example. Let's say I had dysphoria and I didn't like any of my body parts and stuff like that. And I could have, but who remembers? It was so long ago. And maybe I could have been attracted to men, but because of my body parts, I didn't want them to touch me.
Yeah.
So I became attracted to women. Mm-hmm. So now when I transition to man, maybe I'm more freer and I had this surgery and I'm freer and I feel okay about my body parts. So maybe I feel a little bit more comfortable to be with a man. So in that case, it's possible maybe that someone could change their orientation. Again, this is my belief. It's not backed by anything. But most of the time, people's orientations don't change. And you also have to remember, we now live with pansexual and gender fluid and people that, you know, love a woman one day and love a man the next day. And it seems odd, but you know what? If we put people in a room and we could talk about our sexual lives and know that it never would really get out, there's more than the missionary position going on there. You know, it's, people just don't mention it, so why it should be such a big surprise?
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate your openness and your honesty. And we are live every week, and we have repeats throughout the week on Dr. Radio. And also on Saturday at 2 p.m., you can listen to this again. So if you if you want to listen to how you sounded or you want your friends to, they can listen to it. And you've been our guest a few times, and you're always enlightening and helpful, and I really appreciate it.
I always love coming to talk with you.
Yeah, it's very fun. So thank you so much, and please tune in again next week. And have a good night, everybody.
And a great holiday.
Yes, happy holiday. Healthy.